Hey folks, this is Kevin. Just a few words before we start. I wanted to reach out to all the fans to say that if you would like to advertise on our show, you should reach out to me at kevin@risk-show.com. Or maybe you know someone who you think would be good to advertise with us. Reach out to us because we have the podcast, we have the website, we even have the live shows where we can advertise stuff. So, kevin@risk-show.com. Also, we have a brand new website up at risk-show.com. Beautiful. Super cool. And the blog there on the front page is going to be much more active. Audio footage, video footage, articles. You're going to want to check it on a regular basis. And we have a brand new site for our school at thestorystudio.org. That's where we teach our workshops. And those workshops, some of them, you know, some of that workshopping happens over Skype, long distance. So go there as well, thestorystudio.org. And that's it. That's all the opening announcery announcing you're going to get, my friends. Now here's a show. Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. That was Dan Rosen up top with one of my favorite Risk themes. And by the way, we need more of those. So if you're a musician, they're about 30 seconds. They contain the word risk. I don't know if you've noticed, but every damn one has those two things in common. So get cracking, piano man. This is Revolution Void behind me now. Our theme today is a slippery slope. Stories of times that things started out okay, and then just kind of snowballed and spiraled, and then smashed right into each other to create spo-rolled. They spo-rolled. Our first story today comes from a brilliant man who I do not know. I emailed him. Oh, holy shit. Did we have a great email exchange? I said, do you want to do the show? He said, yeah. And he did. Moshe Kasher's whole life is a crazy-ass story. He's writing a book about it, in fact. A lot of drugs, deaf parents, and Orthodox Judaism. Well, you're about to hear the results. What kind of guy comes out of all that? Moshe told this story at our live show at UCB in Los Angeles just a little bit ago. We call this one Winning.
It's important for you to remember that for the purposes of this story, that this was a Christmas/Hanukkah-themed show. That's important information. It will come in handy later. I had just gotten off stage. Obviously, it had gone very well because I've never had a bad set. And I'm just kind of like sitting in the back of the room thanking God for the skill set that he blessed me with or whatever. And these two dudes come into the room, and they're total jerks. They're like rifling through people's stuff and being assholes. They were just terrible people. And they were heckling the performer, and I hated them. And they decided to leave, and my ego wouldn't allow them to just leave without me commenting on their behavior. So I decided that I would applaud their departure as if that was going to teach them some lessons. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we're glad you're leaving. Oh, you know what? I noticed you clapping, and it really made me do some thinking. I need to make some major behavioral changes. Not what happened. The guy turned to me, and he was just like, suck my dick, motherfucker, or whatever thing a bully would say in that moment. Like, you would have said that because you're a big person with the dick word. But I happened to be holding a dreidel in my hand at the time. because it was a Christmas slash Hanukkah themed show, not just because Jews have them at the ready at all times, just in case some shit goes down. But anyway, I just had it in my hand, like it was already cocked. The guy said, fuck you, what was I gonna, what should I have done? I had to, I just threw the fucking dreidel at his head, which is like the most impotent Jewy way to start a fight of all time. Take that, you fiend, ha ha! I went like, I don't know what I thought was gonna happen, like it was gonna land on a certain letter and I was gonna win the fight or whatever. That's not what happened. That's a Jew joke. Super good. Thanks for coming on board with it. But anyway, that's not... He was just like, come outside, damn bitch. And I was like, I think I will come outside for once, for me. Let's do this. I run outside. I run literally like this. I run like an anime character. I get outside, and the guy starts punching me in the face. He just immediately... And that's the first thing you realize as an adult is, oh, shit, I am fighting. I am fighting. I can't unfight. It's too late at this point. I'm already in the shit. I can't undo this. I can't... Oh, you know what? I've thought about the possible consequences, both moral and physical, and I've decided I'm not going to fight you after all. No, it's too late. You have to do something. So I'm not a trained fighter, but I have watched a lot of UFC, which is almost the same thing. So somehow I like get the guy's head in this area, the choke, my choke zone, I will call it, for the purposes of this story, and I just fucking get into it. I'm like choking this guy, and I can hear him beneath me just kind of like choking. And normally I'm super into that, ladies, but... In that moment, I'm like, I'm gonna kill this dude. I'm gonna kill this I'm gonna kill him. So I say, I gotta say something. I go, are you done? Because that felt like the right tough thing to say in that moment. Are you done? And he popped his head out of the choke zone. He goes, I'll never be done. I was like, oh no, I'm fighting a knight. I'm fighting a knight, a medieval knight from the round table. He will never be done. He will fight me to the death. I will die in his arms tonight. But luckily, he quickly changes the subject of my impending sword doom by spitting blood all over my face. Oh, are you guys not into that? Me neither! It's worse for me because I'm already a hypochondriac, or as it's more commonly known, a Jew. I cannot deal with that. I'm freaking out. He's not even there anymore. He's not. He's gone. All that's left is AIDS. It's only AIDS that is left. Everything that has ever caused AIDS ever. He's like a passive anal sex recipient, a dirty junkie sharing a rusty needle underneath a bridge, a blood transfusion bag from the 1980s swaying back and forth, a Senegalese woman living on the side of the freeway. He is all of these things, and I am fighting now. Now just the, like, you know, Notre Dame, the fighting Irish, I'm just fighting like the fighting virus for me and all mankind. I'm freaking out. I just say, back to the choke zone. Somehow his head ends up back in my choke zone. And this time I just fucking really, everything I've got. And the guy reaches up and taps out. He fucking tapped out. I was like, I know what that means. I release thee. Which is how you should always say it. If you want to be tough and assert your dominance, you just, I release thee. If you have like a Three Musketeers rapier sword, it's a good time to, I unleash it, go! And then you can Nadia Comaneci backflip away while waving goodbye. The moment after I released him, though, I released just a flood. This is why it's a slippery slope, because you can't win a fight as an adult. You know, you think you can be tough, you can't. The moment I let him go, I just was flooded with this shame and remorse and guilt. I couldn't believe what I'd done. It was in San Francisco in the Tenderloin. My shoes had popped off. I'm barefoot in the Tenderloin, which in and of itself causes AIDS. Like I felt terrible. Like I'm fighting. I kept thinking about my college degree as if that was somehow connected to why I shouldn't be fighting. Like I just couldn't believe myself. I felt that feeling. You know that feeling you feel the moment after you come when you're with a partner that you definitely shouldn't have been fucking? You know what I mean? That horrible feeling. You're just like, oh, fuck. What am I doing with my life? Who is this beast laying next to me? And you just want to like push that person off of your bed, not to hurt her, but just to make her go away. You know? You want her to fall into a portal at the side of your bed and pop up in front of her own front door, having forgotten the previous 4 hours of her evening. Like, I could have sworn there was an effeminate Jew somewhere in my evening. Never mind. Carry on with my life. But I didn't even get to fuck this guy. I just had the shame and the guilt, and I ran up to the guy. I just go, I'm so sorry. I don't know what got into me. I apologize. I have a college degree. You understand. He shakes my hand. He leaves. The bouncer just starts freaking out. He's never seen anything so noble in his life. He's like, I can't fucking believe it. These two faggy kids came out of my bar. They attacked one another. At the end, they just shook each other's hands and walked their separate ways. There is a God. But for me, I just feel terrible and remorse and guilt. And then I realize, wait, I won. Like, there's somebody here who's having a worse night than me, you know what I mean? Like, think about that. Think about that. You're in a fight with somebody. You're in his choke zone. He's choking you out. You tap out. He releases thee. You look up, and it's fucking me looking back at you. Hey. I'm sorry. I have a college degree. You guys, we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. That's about all out of me. Thank you so much.
be over there. I only see you when you're walking. Walking to somewhere. You're so restless. It must be special there.
This is Risk. That was Cack Madafaka. Cack Madafaka. K-A-K-K-A. M-A-D-D-A-F-A-K-K-A. With a song called Restless. And this is Tortu Supersonic behind me now. You know, it's been a while since I've mentioned our All-Star episode, which is one of the very best episodes that we've ever done. And you can't find it in the regular podcast feed. It is in albums on iTunes. If you search on iTunes in the iTunes store for Risk All-Star episode, you'll find it there in albums. It's $2.99. It has Sarah Silverman, Mark Maron, Kerry Kenny Silver, Nick Swardson, Adam McKay, and Kevin Nealon. And that episode has some of the most outrageous stories that have ever been told on Risk. It's just jam-packed, well worth it. Go get it. Another way you can help us keep all these balls in the air, that is, our shows, our school, our tour that we're trying to get going for the fall, which is why we want people from Orlando, Chicago, Boston, and Austin to write to us at tour@risk-show.com. Anyway, another way you can support us is to press the new donation buttons on the sidebar on the right hand of the new website. If you give a donation of $50 or more, you get a signed Risk t-shirt. And you do have the option of making your donation tax deductible, too. Next up, another person I have never actually met face to face, but I am pretty sure I have smoked his marijuana before. Steve Agee told this story at our show in Los Angeles. We call it What I Did for Love.
My therapist says that I have an overwhelming need to be liked by everybody. And I agree with her, mainly because I don't want her to hate me for disagreeing. You need to know that for this story. Also, you need to know, like Mosher said, I was on the Sarah Silverman program where I played a gay pot smoker. And the gay part isn't crucial to the story. It's the pot smoking part. I've been doing stand-up pretty heavily for about 7 or 8 years now, and when I started doing Sarah's show, I noticed this weird thing started happening where after shows, people would wait for me outside and want to get high with me. Just strictly based on my character. And I was never, you know, I've smoked pot, and I was never a big pot smoker. Until this started happening, mainly because I didn't want to say no to these fans. I was just caving and just being like, okay, please like me. I'll smoke your marijuana. And so after show, like, people are always like, hey, man, can I smoke you out? That's how it always is. Can I smoke you out? And I'm always like, yeah, man. So now I've developed this huge habit of smoking pot. I love pot. And there's a comedy festival in Portland, Oregon called the Bridgetown Comedy Festival. And it's fairly new. It's only happened like 4 years. And I went up for the first time a year ago, almost exactly a year ago. And I think because it was Portland, the whole thing of people wanting to get high with you after a show really went up to a whole nother level. I was up there for a week, and it was people wanting to get high with me after shows, people wanting to get high with me before shows. Somehow they knew where all the comedians were staying. People were waiting in the lobby of the hotel to get high with me. And it was really a horrible scene. And not only just wanting to get me high, people were giving me pot. And I don't mean just a joint here or there. Like, lots of pot. Edibles, joints, bags of weed, every form of pot you can imagine. People would be like, hey, thanks for getting high with me after the show. Here's something for you. Like, really a weird form of tipping or something. And I didn't want to make them mad, so I was like, why, thank you very much. I will take this. And after 5 days, I can't stress how much marijuana I had after 5 days. Like, I had a backpack on me, one of those little JanSport backpacks that I would use to carry, like, my notes in, like my notebook and my camera. I abandoned all that stuff from the bag and was just putting pot in my backpack. By the time I was ready to leave Oregon, I couldn't zip the backpack shut. I had pounds. I'm not joking. I had pounds of marijuana in a bag. And this was awesome. The one thing is, they flew me to Oregon. So I had a flight back. I'm not an idiot. I wasn't going to get on a plane with a bag full of pounds of marijuana. But also, I wasn't going to leave pounds of marijuana in Oregon. So I had a friend who came up to Oregon. She flew up there, and she had rented a car while she was up there. And I approached her the last night of the festival, and I said, hey, you know what would be awesome? If you just kept that rental car, we canceled our plane tickets and drove back to L.A. And she's like, yeah, that'll be fun. And I had the ulterior motive of, like, just getting all this pot back to L.A. So I was like, I'm never going to have to buy marijuana again. Like, this will literally keep me high for years. And so she was like, okay, cool, we'll drive. And so we canceled our plane tickets. We were about to leave Oregon, and I was like, there's one catch. I can't drive. My license was suspended. I have a lot of tickets that are outstanding. I'm not supposed to be driving. So you are going to do all the driving. It's like a day and a half of driving. So she's like, all right, whatever. It'll still be fun. So the plan was to get to San Francisco the first night. And we were on course. And another thing you need to know is I'm not a good passenger. I love to drive, but I am horrible. I get motion sickness. And I found something that helped motion sickness greatly was pot. And so when we got to the first rest area, you know, on our journey, I went into my backpack, got a little baggie of pot and a pipe, and smoked some outside at this nice wooded rest area. It was quite beautiful. And so then I put the baggie and the pipe in the center console, like in the armrest. And this went on for, you know, the whole drive. And it was great. We get to Southern Oregon and the Siskiyou Mountains, which are the last, you know, last mountain range before you cross into California. It's just up and over. That's it. And we're there. We're in California. The only thing was it started to snow in the mountains. And we get up to the top, and my friend was kind of freaking out. She's like, I don't drive in the snow. She's like, I don't know what to do. And it was about 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, she said, will you drive? Just get us out of the snow. Just get us down the mountain. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's fine. What's the worst that can happen? So at the top of the mountain, I get in the car. 20 minutes later, we're down the mountain, and we cross into California. No problems. I'm just looking for a rest area or a truck stop or somewhere to pull over where we can switch back now. So we're coming down the hill. We're on this really long straightaway, and I'm basically coasting at about 80 miles an hour. And then as we're driving, we're talking, and I look, and I see a cop just sitting there on the side of the road. And sure enough, the red lights come on, and sure enough, I start having a horrible panic attack. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to go to jail. The severity of me having 2 pounds of marijuana in this car didn't hit me until we were pulled over on the side of the road, and I was going through my head of all the okay, I know they sentence you based on the weight of the drugs that you have. And I have pounds of drugs. I'm going to prison if I get caught with this stuff. And also, I'm like, this is just... Oh, the other thing was, I'm going from Oregon into California. That's trafficking. Not only am I just picking it up from a friend down the street, I'm bringing it into California. People hate when you bring drugs into their state. Like, cops hate that shit. I watched the shows on Discovery Channel. And I'm sitting there really nervous. My heart's pounding. I'm like, I'm trafficking pounds of drugs. The police aren't going to believe me saying, I just want to be liked by people. I couldn't say no. So, you know, and this is all for me. All 2 pounds of this drugs are this drugs. All 2 pounds of this are for me. They're going to nail me, arrest me for intent to sell and trafficking. So I'm really freaking out. And my friend is very calm. And she's like, don't worry, you were just speeding. He's just going to write you a ticket for speeding. And I'm like starting to calm down. I'm like, yeah, yeah. He's like, can I see your driver's license? I give him the license. He goes back to his car. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, he seemed nice. This cop seemed nice. He comes back and he says, can you please get out of the car? And then I was like, I wanted to throw up all over myself. And he takes me back to his police car. And he's like, put your hands on the hood of the car. I'm like, oh, fuck, this is how it starts. This is how it starts. I've seen Locked Up Abroad. This is how it fucking starts. And he starts frisking me. And then he puts me in the back seat of the squad car. And I'm like, what's the problem, officer? And he's like, well, you're driving on a suspended license. It's a rental car. He was really nice, by the way. He's like, we're going to impound the car. I'm going to take you guys to a hotel. And you can sort this out in the morning. I'm really sorry. He's like, it's the law. I have to do this. He was really nice. I can't stress how nice he was. So then he walks up, and I'm like, can I get some stuff out of the car first? And he's like, nope, you have to sit in here now. And so he goes and gets my friend, brings her back, doesn't frisk her, but throws her in the back of the car. He's like, so the car's going to come. The truck's going to come tow your car. He's like, I'm going to take... We're near a town called Wairika, which is a population of, like, sad. That's what it is. It's, there's, like, nobody there. And so there's, like, just a couple hotels. He's like, we'll take you to a Motel 6. He was being really nice and apologetic. He's like, what I can do, I'll go get your bags out of the car, and I'll put them in the trunk of my car so you have your stuff with you. And I'm like going, nope, we don't need them. We don't need them. Just leave them in the car. You know what? It's fine. Just leave them in the... I'm really, like, getting loud, and, like, my voice is going up, like, 2 octaves. No, we don't need the bags. It's fine. And he's like, nonsense. You need your stuff. You're going to a hotel. And he's really nice, and he's, like, you know, sauntering over to the car. And so he starts getting our bags, and he gets her suitcase and her bag, and he's walking. And he's, like, waving at us, and he's throwing... He's like, just a few more minutes. And then there was just this weird slow-motion moment of him coming out of the back of the car, and he's got my backpack. And it was just, like, I saw the whole thing in slow motion. He's just walking with the biggest grin on his face, and he's, like, pointing at us and smiling. And he puts it in the trunk of his car. I'm like... beautiful. I might get away with this shit. And then he's like, what else? Any cell phones or anything you guys need? And then I'm like, my cell phone is in the center console next to a bag of weed and a pipe. I'm like, nope. No, I don't know. I have my phone on me. It's okay. And he's like, I'll just make one last check of the car. And I see him go into the car, and I can see just over the seat that he's in the center console digging around. And then he comes back to the car, throws my cell phone on my lap. He's like, let's go. I'm like, okay, not bad, not bad. We get to the hotel. He drops us off and leaves. We take our bags. First thing I do is take this bag of pot and throw it in the fucking dumpster, like, at the hotel. And my friend is like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't want anything to do with pot for the rest of my fucking life. That view would change later, but so I threw it in the dumpster, because in my paranoid head, I was like, they'll probably find something in the car later and come back to arrest us, so I'm getting rid of this. And so then we get into the hotel, and we rent a room, and I'm like, hey, how about the fact that he went in the center console and didn't even see the drugs there? And she's like, oh, yeah. She's like, I took care of that. She reaches in her pants. When she saw me getting frisked, she grabbed everything and stuck it in her panties. Like, she fucking saved my life. And I was like, oh my God, that is amazing. She's like, here you go. I threw it all out the window. And the next day, she had a horrible, horrible time getting the car back because it was rented to her. And they're like, dollar rental cars, like, why the fuck are you giving a car to a guy who can't drive? And she explained, we were in Yreka the whole next day trying to get the car out of impound. We got it, got back to California. I have since given up smoking. I smoke pot, but I will not smoke after shows. I don't accept pot from strangers anymore. My life's changed a little bit. I've seen what just wanting people to like you can bring to your life. Like, that was, I could have gone to prison just for being like, please be my friend. It's, yeah, it was a lesson well learned. Thank you very much, you guys. You've been awesome.
I've always led a pretty low-key life. As a teenager, I had no interest in experimenting with drugs. I just had this, like, crippling fear that I would be that girl who tries coke once and just dies from it. Shortly after turning 26, I suddenly developed this addiction. I became addicted to ChapStick. And I know how ridiculous this sounds. I just woke up one morning and upon my, you know, once daily swipe of my Burt's Bees original peppermint, I just sort of suddenly found myself reaching for the tube again only a few minutes later. And if I licked the ChapStick off or if it like became absorbed into my lips, like even a little bit, I would just have to reapply. And if I didn't, I would just start like licking my lips, and I would feel anxious and I would feel sick. And then it was all I could think about until I got some more. And knowing that I, you know, had my stash around was really comforting. And when I like put it on my lips, this orgasmic wave washes over me. But it's that sort of kind of, it's like that shameful orgasmic feeling that I would feel when I was a teenager and I would have a date with a flannel body pillow and, you know, like reruns of Charles in Charge on my mom's couch. I was ashamed, you could say. I was ashamed of this thing. I mean, because growing up, I was plagued with facial tics and I was nicknamed No Boobs Blink Face. And I didn't have a lot of friends when I was younger. And I was worried that this sort of ChapStick addiction, I didn't want to be shunned now by my grown up group of friends for, you know, for sort of being labeled as the girl with the weird thing for ChapStick. So I felt really self-conscious using ChapStick around them. And I would like sneak into the bathroom or, you know, kind of lean down to tie my shoe and like get a quick fix of like my bomb buddy. So on, you know, busy days while I'm like running around a lot, I'll only use ChapStick maybe like 25 times. But on days when I'm like sitting in a coffee shop working, you know, just sort of stagnantly sitting with a stick right in front of me, I will mindlessly swipe like 100 to 200 times in the period of like 8 hours. once I watched the movie 127 Hours, and that night I had this nightmare that I was Aaron Ralston, and I was trapped, you know, in the cavern, and my arm was pinned beneath the boulder. And in the dream, I was absolutely terrified, not because I was going to have to cut my arm off, but because I hadn't brought any chapstick to the canyon. Once I was traveling on a bus from Manhattan to Massachusetts, where my family lives, and I had one stick of chapstick in my purse. I still don't know why I only brought one. And at one point, I don't know, it was maybe like 90 minutes into the ride, I took the cap off of the chapstick and the head of it popped off. And then like in slow motion, it landed on the floor of the bus and just rolled. So I have this like decapitated piece of bomb just rolling on the floor. And I just jumped up and I quickly grabbed it. And it had like rolled in all of this dirt and grime. And I picked it up and I was like, oh, damn it. And I used my fingernail to sort of just kind of scrape the top layer off, you know, so I kind of got all the dirt off. And I was like, whatever. So I decided I'm going to use it. And I go to raise it to my face. And just as I'm about to press it to my lips, I see it. A small black curly hair sticking to the side. I was about to put some stranger's pube in my mouth. This moment raised a red flag for me, and I decided to do a little research to find out if anyone else had this weird chapstick addiction like I did. So I found this website. It's called Lip Balm Anonymous. It was started by a man named Kevin, who in 1995 found that he was addicted to chapstick. And he wanted to get some help, so he turned to friends who use the popular 12-step program, you know, found in Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. And in 3 weeks, he kicked his habit, and then he started a website about it. So I'm like clicking around, I'm looking at the website, and I learn on the site that chapstick addiction sort of happens because when someone uses a lot of chapstick, the body stops producing, you know, the moisturizing agents, like natural ones, so the lips will just dry out without the help of chapstick. And then other people, you know, sort of cite like this, like a psychological need for the ritual of covering the lips. And I think that mine was sort of a combination of both. But I was happy and sort of, I don't know, I guess a little comforted, as weirded out as I was. I did feel comforted that there were other people that were kind of going through it as well, I guess. So on their website, there's also this test to determine if you're addicted to chapstick. I answered yes to a lot of the questions. One of the questions was, has the use of lip balm interfered with your job? And at the time, the answer was no, but soon I would hit rock bottom. So I'd been stuck in chapstick for like 8 months, and at the time I was working at this large advertising agency. And on that day we had this huge pitch with some important creatives, and if the meeting went well and they liked our illustrators, it could mean that they would bring more work my way, you know, which, you know, could, you know, someday maybe lead to a raise. So I get to my desk and people are kind of trickling into the meeting. So I grab my notepad, my pen, and I reach into my canvas bag for chapstick because I always like to, you know, have a stick in my pocket during meetings. I find it really comforting to have it so close. But there was no chapstick in the bag. So I open my bottom drawer where I keep my work stash, but it was empty. And then I see this post-it note stuck to the side of my computer. And in like large, bold letters, it read, "Urgently, get more chapstick." So this like wave of panic sweeps over me as I just sort of run through a mental Rolodex of just meetings and digital training sessions and creative briefs. Like, it was going to be a crazy day. I wasn't even going to have time to pee, let alone like leave the building to go buy chapstick. So, you know, this meeting is going on and the creatives are talking and doing their thing. And I'm sort of, you know, smiling and taking notes and trying to act all the world like someone not about to have a panic attack. And it starts happening. I feel my tongue just like dart out, sail across my lips. I'm licking. But now my lips sort of feel like they're drying out. The licking isn't helping. So I start chewing on the fleshy, sort of on the inside of my mouth, to the point where it starts bleeding and I'm tasting blood. And I'm starting to feel sick and I'm like sweating and I'm dying. And these guys are talking and I'm just trying to smile and like be cool. And then, one of the creatives asks me, he's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I'm fine." And he's like, "You're kind of breathing like my cat when she's choking on a thread from the throw rug. You can step out if you need to." And I'm like, okay, this is my chance. They're giving me an opportunity. They're practically telling me to go get my fix. So I'm like, you know, my stomach is a little upset. You know, maybe I think I'll just go get some Pepto and I will be right back. And I just sort of slowly walked away. But then as soon as I turned the corner, I raced out of the building. Like, I race like when you run at pigeons when you're trying to scare the shit out of them. And I ran down the street to Duane Reade. And they have a stack of Burt's Bees at the front register. So as soon as I got there, I just threw it on the counter, swiped my card. I run out. I removed the protective strip. And I just applied the shit out of that chapstick. And it felt good. The instantaneous relief of like the nausea and the anxiety and the sweats and everything, it was comforting, but it was also really frightening because I'm like, what is becoming of me? This actually has become a problem. I need to quit chapstick. I need to find a way to get it under control. You know, I kind of had that moment of acceptance. So I get back to the meeting. I sit down with my notepad pen. One of my illustrators is showing like a slide of work, and I'm like ready to be fully involved in the presentation, and everyone is just staring at me. And I'm like, oh, they must be concerned about my well-being. So I like pat my tummy, and I'm like, oh, I got some Pepto. I'm feeling so much better now. Thank you. So now I'm feeling alive and confident and moisturized. And so I give my big presentation and I just nail it. I mean, these people are captivated. They're still kind of staring at me, but I'm thinking that, you know, they're like, wow, she is really pulling through the stomach ache and being totally professional and awesome. She must really care about her job. So it's great. So once the meeting is over and the important creatives have left and everything, one of my illustrators comes over to me and he sort of taps me on the shoulder and he's like, you should maybe think about looking in a mirror before going to your next meeting. I noticed it as soon as I walked into the bathroom. From the corner of my eye, I catch a glimpse of my face in the mirror. My mouth and its surrounding area is just completely caked with this like chalky white substance. I look like I had just shoved my face into a bag of cocaine, is what it looked like. So I hadn't noticed it on the label when I was like frantically throwing it on the counter at Duane Reade, but there in these like big, bold red letters, it said, Lifeguard's Choice Weatherproofing Balm. So I'd bought those little white sticks that you like put on your nose when you're a lifeguard, and I had rubbed it all over my mouth. So by now I'm like, oh my God. What do they think? By now, everyone at that meeting is like formulating their own opinion of what I excused myself to go do. You know, did she walk into the back alley for crack? Did she blow someone for crack? Do we really want to work with a girl who blows someone in a back alley for crack? But I like wasn't sure what to do. Because like if I tell everyone, oh, I'm addicted to chapstick and that's why I left the meeting and I lied about it, then they would just think I was a crazy cokehead who wasn't good at lying. But I didn't just need to admit my chapstick addiction to them. I really needed to admit it to myself. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go out there just to my illustrators, just the four of them, and I'm just going to tell them the truth. So I go over to them and I look at them all and I say, guys, I have a problem. And surprisingly, it felt really good just to like get it out finally, just say something to someone. I just didn't have to live with it by myself for so long. This doesn't have to be a secret. I mean, these aren't just my coworkers, they're my friends. And then this janitor just walks by my desk and he points at me and he's like, you look like a fucking idiot. And the healing process began.
A slippery slope is like
When you poop on
the
You diary on a slip and slide that's on the hill. That is a slippery slope. That you is, cannot oh walk up God. That shit. It is fucking diarrheaville oh anywhere from here. Let him say it. I will say some shit.
Well, you know how Shakespeare always included a moment of comic relief in his tragedies? That was your little moment of insanity relief. Little moment of insanity from Jeff Barr and Robbie Sehag there. That was actually Jeff failing to get stories on the subject of a slippery slope from people who were in a certain condition at the Apogea Festival, the little mini Burning Man that they have in Colorado. Before that, the wonderful writer Carrie Doherty. She had a story that we call The Lip Fix, and she has a blog called Fucked in Park Slope. Before that, the wonderful Julia Stone, who you might know from the duo Angus and Julia. We heard Catastrophe from her album The Memory Machine. And this is Christian Bjorklund behind me now. Well, our final story comes from someone who I remember from back in the days of Luna Lounge on Ludlow Street. You may know him from the movies, the Hangover movies, and the show How I Met Your Mother. And he threw down the gauntlet. He really told a quintessential Risk story here. This is Brian Callen with a story we call Nine is Enough.
I'm actually a little nervous. I perform a lot. I never get nervous when I do stand-up. But this story, I told him, I said, I'll tell a story about a slippery slope. It's a true story. I said, but, you know, it's not a very tame story. It's a real story about what I did. And he's like, well, you know, and what is it? And I told him, he goes, I gave him the brief outline. He goes, that's a good story. So I'm like, all right, well, you know, here goes. So you'll look at me differently probably after this. But, you know, I don't have any real secrets in my life. So this is how I live my life. And about 6 years ago, I was single, and I had an audition the next day for Sidney Pollack, and he was only seeing like three or four people, and it was this big campaign. And so, you know, I had to get kind of ready for it and stuff, and I'm driving home. I had a long day. I'm driving home to go get ready for my audition. And I get a call from a girl that I used to have sex with, you know, just periodically. There were a lot of girls like that, you know, when I was younger. And and one time I remember we had sex. She called me up. I get this like text, like, was it actually before texting? She'd be like, you know, booty call or whatever. And I'd be like, yeah, you know. And I'd show up. And then one day as I was leaving, it was the middle of the day. And she goes, she looks at me. She goes, next time bring a friend. Yeah. And I go, what do you mean? She goes, like a friend. I go, like a guy? She goes, yeah. And I go, like, okay, what's your type, you know? And she goes, like you. And I go, okay. And I left. And it never happened because I didn't really know how to say to my buddy, hey, you want to go fuck a girl, right? You know, I don't know how to do that. That's always, I mean, I will. I have friends who will do it, but it's always, I don't know if I'm getting anything out of that while you're, you know, it doesn't, there's your dick, you know, it's all weird. Yeah, so that's weird. So anyway, so that's just background on this girl, who's a fantastic girl. So I'm driving to, I gotta get home to get my rest. I gotta go over my Sidney Pollack thing so I can make a lot of money. I'm a serious actor and everything else, and he gave me like none of my credits. But anyway, so I'm driving, and then I get this call from this girl, and this is what she says. She goes, Brian, I say, yeah. She goes, let's call her Tina. And she goes, it's Tina. And I go, hey. And she goes, what are you doing? And I go, well, I'm driving to Venice. She goes, no, you're not. You're driving up to the Sheraton Universal. We have 6 girls and only 2 cocks. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know you're looking at me this way, but that's how I am. That's how guys are. You know, I got things in my life I want to do, right? I want to stop crime. I want to, you know, I do stop crime. I want to kill a bad guy with a sword and, you know, and then and fuck a lot of girls, you know, at the same time. That's how all guys are. I don't give a shit what anybody says. And, this is just, I'm going to be very honest and raw about how we are. So maybe I am, you know. So anyway, so I go, oh, I don't understand. She goes, we have 6 really hot girls and only 2 cocks. So get your ass over here now. We have a suite in the Sheraton. So I go, fuck. Now, whenever somebody says that and you got a Sydney Pollack audition, you shouldn't move. You just keep driving. You should hang up. This is, you go like this. You go, anything other than this, click, click, keep driving, sleep. Anything other than that, any other movement is a slippery slope, you understand? Any other movement, any other. So I make the mistake. I go, oh, I got a Sydney Pollack audition tomorrow, and I got to get home. You know, what are you guys doing? She goes, we're having a fucking great time. Don't be an idiot. 6 girls, 2 cocks. Click, she hangs up. So I go, I'm not going to call her back. I'm fucking, she's a freak. I'm fucking driving to Sydney Pollack. I'm going to drive there. And I'm, you know, I got to go home now. And I go, I mean, if I see a place where they sell condoms, maybe I'll stop just in case. No, in case you never know what happens. You always want to have condoms on you anyway, just in case. Like if I find myself, oh, I'm stranded. My car broke down. Can you come get me? And then she kidnaps, whatever the fuck. You rationalize. You rationalize these things. So I'm like, I can't do this. And, you know, I know it's a slippery slope, you know. And so I'm driving and I go, I'm just going to drive home. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. She's a freak. She's a freak. I'm not going to do this shit. I'm like, I don't fucking walk into a room with 6 girls. And I don't know who they are. I don't know if they look like 2 dudes. I'm fucking, you know, maybe they want my kidney. I'm not going to do this shit. So that's what I'm saying to myself. I'm like, my phone rings again, and I shouldn't answer it. I answer it again. She goes, we're waiting. What are you going to do? Are you going to make a choice or what? What the fuck? And I go, Tina, I gotta get home. And she goes, fuck it. You're a pussy. You could have had the experience of a lifetime. You're out of your fucking mind. Gang, like that. And I see 7-Eleven. Yeah. And so I say to myself, all right, look, I'm just going to drive to 7-Eleven and get some Gatorade, and I'll pick up the condoms. If she calls me up to there, then, you know, maybe it's a sign. Oh, I forgot a very important, my God, I can't believe it. I forgot a very important part of the story. Before this, I'm driving, and a woman on NPR who had cancer, and she was a writer, and they said, what would you have done differently? And she said, I never would have done anything because it made sense in my life. I never would have made anything because it would have made sense. And I was like, that's a huge part of the story. But I was nervous before this, so I'm not, you know. So I'm thinking that, you know, that's a very important, you know, there are 6 girls, and, you know, then part of me, if I don't stop and go there, I'm a pussy, you know. I talk a big game, but if you're not going to step up, then, you know, you're all fucking talk. So, and I go, you know, and also it makes no sense to go there because I got to meet Sydney Pollack tomorrow, but I'm just going to go to 7-Eleven. I end up buying condoms, Magnum. Who said that? Did you say that out loud? And so, cheap joke, but true. And so so I get them, and I put them in my pocket, and I find myself driving to the Sheraton. And I say to myself, I'm just going to go there, and I'm going to drive there, and if my phone rings again, then it's a sign. But I'm going to just drive there because I'll go the long way to Venice, because I was going this way. I'll go up this way. I like that route anyway because it's highway. It's faster in a way. I could get, you know, on a side street, bullshit, so maybe I'll go this way. I'm driving there. Phone rings again. Are you coming or not? I'm coming. I'm coming. Hilarious. See that? Hilarious. Double entendre. So I get there. Room 3 for the story. It's 1305. Whatever the fuck. I go up there. Heart's beating. I'm like, oh, this is so bad, man. I can't. This is a slippery slope, right? I'm already on the slope here, and I'm going down. So the slope is you answer the phone, you answer it again, you go get condoms. Now you're driving to the Sheraton. Now you're at the Sheraton. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to, you know what? Everybody has an experience. I'm just going to show up. I'm going to show up, and I'm going to look around. I'm not going to do anything. I'll be a spectator. That's what I'll do. That's what I'm doing. You rationalize this shit in your head. And she shows up, and she comes out, and she gives me a list of what I can't do, which is I can't spit, I can't get rough, I can't spit on anybody, and that's about it. You know. But here's the best part. Here's the best part. I think I was doing a show at the time, and I'm like, you know, I don't know who the fuck's that. She makes me put on. She gives me a mask. A doll mask, a white doll mask. Like, I'm not a white doll mask. Yeah, you're right to cover your face. You're a young girl, you know? And so it's a white doll mask with these things like that. And I got to be honest, I get a glimpse in the room and I see, you know, these girls with these masks. You know, the eyes wide shut, the masks with the feathers. And, you know, I'm an animal. Every day is a fucking 12-step process for me. You know what I mean? It is. I don't care. That's just how I am. So I look at that, and I go, and I just immediately, like a bird dog, I just go, I got to fuck somebody. That's impossible. Because they were so good looking, like tan and crazy and professionals, you know, just pros. Who the fuck knows why they were there? I find out later. Oh, by the way, so why? What do you mean six girls? What is six girls with two guys? Why would they need me? What are we talking about here? Well, it turns out that there's a certain celebrity. Don't ask me who it is. I'll never tell. I know people are like, who is it, please? But there was a celebrity, and it was his wife's birthday. And they were into this kind of thing. And my girl said, I know a guy who will put in a performance here. Thank you. Very flattering. Yeah, and so he's got to come. So this is how I got invited in this, because they wanted somebody else. So now I get in there, and I'm like, fucking, this is crazy. And I got my mask on, and I'm looking at these girls. And I the celebrity guy, I can see from here, and I go, I know that guy from somewhere. I don't know where the fuck I know him from. This is weird. All right, I guess I don't know if I can take off my pants. I'm taking my pants off. And yeah, this is going to get raw. It really is. It is, but I don't, I got to tell the story. This is all true. All right, it's all true. You'll look at me differently. It's okay. So maybe a couple girls freaks would get turned on. Most of you would be like, I'd never date that guy. It's okay. And so I take my pants off, and I'm not really worried about nudity. I don't give a shit. I've never been, you know. So that, and this is the first, and the girl, she starts, you know, my old girl, she starts getting me ready. She gets on her knees and starts working me in this area, if you know what I mean, right? You know, it's a blowjob. And so, yeah, you guys are like, what was he? It's like a fucking, such a stupid thing. And so I think, and this is what I thought, this is a very funny part of it. This is funny. I have the mask on, and I look in the mirror, and my legs, I realize, are almost as white as the mask. And I literally said this in my head. I go, I got to take this tanning thing more seriously for you. That's what I said, because I didn't like the way I looked. I was too white, you know, and I was a little, but by the way, the other two guys were, you know, they were kind of weak looking. There wasn't much going on, not a lot of push-ups and things. So I'm like, all right, I'm all right. By the way, two guys, one dude who was not doing anything, and orange, shaved, disgusting, and sitting like this with his very hot black girlfriend or wife or who the fuck it was. Just she's stacked. She's they're kind of supervising. And there's a guy on the bed, and he's going crazy with a girl, and he keeps saying Rosebud. I swear to God, he's going rosebud, which I guess means when you pull out and it looks like a rose. I don't know what the fuck he's doing. So, and I noticed, and I'm like, wow, this guy's fucking going to town. And he had very skinny, strange, long, weird, bulbous, but skinny cock. And I was like, a weird thing, but muscular, weird. You know, you never know with a guy can be big with not so impressive. And so, I'm all fucked up, and she's working me here. And then the girl whose birthday it is, she comes, and now she goes, Tina, she goes, she gets on her knees, and this other guy is here, and she's blowing this guy, and she takes me, and she pushes me into, so now I got a mask on, and I'm like this, and the girl, the birthday girl, she starts to work me, right? And so I'm like, this is a pornographic movie. This is a guy I don't even fucking know, and he's getting blood. Oh, there it is. By the way, and not to be a dick, this is so, but my was bigger than this guy. And, you pay attention to those things. So I'm like, this is awesome. You know, it's a good thing. You're like, all right, I'm doing all right in this situation. And then, and here's the crazy part. So I know the theme is slippery slope, so it goes way beyond this. Don't worry. And so I'm getting blown, and she's fantastic at it. And I'm gonna go here. I didn't say come. I go, I'm gonna go here. You know, I'm gonna go because I fucking can't deal with this because I'm already turned on and it's tapping into my whole addiction. And the guy, the celebrity, goes, hold on. He goes, hold on. I gotta get this. And he pulls out a video camera. Yeah, but I got a mask. I don't give a fuck. And so, and it's for his private fantasy files. I'm obviously part of a whole thing. So he shows film, and I, you know, and it goes, and she, the whole thing, like just like a porn, honestly. She takes the whole, it's unbelievable. You don't even know me, and you're into it. It's just fantastic and hot as shit. It's like just exactly like that. Oh, holy shit. Now, what do you do? Now, I dodge a bullet. I didn't fuck anybody. I got a little bit blown here, and I got here, and I got a mask. I had the experience, right? What do you do? There's now she's over here and the other guy's here and they're fucking, and he's got the camera on the other guy who's saying Rosebud, and then the guy with the shaved thing is asking if he can fuck, he asks his girl if he can fuck the girl Tina, and yeah, she goes yeah, and so it's weird, but she's not fucking, she's all weird. So I go over here and I start putting on my clothes because I fucking dodged a bullet and I had an experience, but I gotta get back to Sydney Pollack, so I'm gonna, you know, do all this stuff, and I'm putting on my stuff, and I and I go to walk out, and a girl comes up to me, and she I didn't see her before. She comes out and she has this same thing with these crazy garters and stuff, and she goes, you're not gonna fuck me? Now again, I just lost it, but this slippery slope, because if you go a second time as a guy, you know, you got your second win, now you're really gonna go. You know, there's no point in no return. You're gonna be there for at least 2 hours, right? So I go, well, I don't know, I gotta get back, I gotta this stuff, and she goes, so you're not gonna fuck me? And so long story short, I go, I can't be a dick, I can't be rude, I'm gonna fuck you. Yeah. So I'm gonna jump ahead. I have sex with her. And the girl who was the wife, the celebrity wife, she goes, I'm seeing red. Now it's done. I'm point of no return. I'm going crazy, right? It's you. Once you get in, once you're in a whorehouse, you got to have fun. You just go all the way. I know it's appalling. I can't even see your faces, but I'm sure it's shocking. All true. And I'm going crazy. So I'm sweating through the fucking mask, and I'm trying to breathe and holding it because I don't give a shit at this point. And I'm going crazy. And I'm like, oh, this is unbelievable. I'm looking over there. I'm like, fucking this and granted that, blah, 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 fucking like that. And she sees what an animal I am, and she goes, I want some of that. And she goes, don't use him up or something like that. So she grabs me now, and she brings me on top. She pushes me down on the bed, and she gets on top of me. The girl who's the celebrity's wife. So I'm like, this is unbelievable. Now you're fucking me. By the way, I condom the whole time. So, you know, just in case. You know. So I'm paranoid. I am. So she's not having sex. And the celebrity, this is great. The celebrity comes out. We're good. So yeah, this the celebrity comes out, and he goes, and now I know who he is. Now I figure out who he is. And so I'm like, this is fucking great. And he sees me having sex with my wife, and he comes up and he goes, hold on, I want to get in. And he wants to get, yeah, he wants to go into the, yeah, he wants to go in south, right? So and she's like this, and I'm here, and she goes, I see her go, I don't want to, let's not, I'm tired, let me just fuck. And he goes, come on, and they're having this weird silent thing, like, let me just fuck you, come on. She's like, I don't believe. So he's like, yeah, she goes, all right, whatever. So now I'm like, this is weird, because I got this guy, something's going to touch. I'm like, whatever, fuck it, I'm already gone, it doesn't matter, I still got this, I'm sweating, I'm breathing, and I'm having, and he can't get in. So he goes, what the fuck? I can't get in. And she goes, well, don't fucking blame me. I told you I didn't want to do it. It's not my fault if you can't get in. What are you being? And they start having a fight about getting, as I'm like, just shut the fuck up. I'm trying to, you know, get a rhythm going here for real. And they're having a fight. And I said to myself, this is why I'm telling the story. I go, that's a slippery slope with their relationship. How are they going to, this is very, very dangerous territory. You know, you're fucking on it. You're losing now and with no breaks. How do you come back from that? I'm trying to fuck you in the ass, but you're banging some stranger and you're being a baby with a doll mask and white legs, you know, the whole thing. So he gets off in a huff, whatever, like that. Now she and I have a thing, even through my mask, at least in my mind we do. And it's hot, she's beautiful, and we just have this making love. And finally, she says, I want you to come in my mouth. Did you get my... I can't believe I'm telling the story. I've never told the story in public, ever. So, I haven't, but it's okay. And so I well out and I go, and she wants me to, you know, and so she starts to work me the way, remember, it's full circle. She comes back to what she was doing before. She was amazing, fucking amazing, unbelievable. And so there, and now I lose it again. And he, the celebrity, comes running out now, and his fucking mask is basically, it's here. He's not even wearing it anymore. He's so pissed off. And he comes running out with the video camera, like this. He comes out like this. He goes, oh, fucking honey. I came too fast. He wanted to catch it on the, so, oh, honey. And she goes, what do you want me to do? Stick my finger in his fucking dick? And they start having another fight about the fact that I came. And they were fighting the whole time. And I was like, oh, thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. Awesome. I'll see you later, man. And I fucking left. And then to cap the whole story out, the next day, exhausted Sidney Pollack, he asked me to make an adjustment. I was too fucking tired, and I didn't get it. And he went like this. Okay, thank you. And I didn't get the part. Thank you very much.
That's it for this go-round, folks. Don't forget to check out our beautiful new websites at risk-show.com and thestorystudio.org. Keep up with all that extra content we're putting on the blog. Speaking of extra, we now have these very special episodes that come between the regular episodes. We call it Extra Risk. Most of those episodes will focus on one longer story or just a conversation with a storyteller and various other kinds of experiments. Check out the first one with Tom Shalhoub. It's fantastic. And search in the iTunes store for our All-Star episode with Mark Maron, Sarah Silverman, Carrie Kenny, Nick Swartzen, Kevin Nealon, and Adam McKay. Just $2.99. And it's one of our very best episodes ever. You'll find it in the albums section of the iTunes store. Oh, just one more thing. When you go to the new website, be sure to check out the submissions page because we want you to pitch us your stories. And everything you need to know about how to do that is there on that submissions page. Right now, we're looking for stories on the themes Close Calls, Trust, and Met on the Net. We're going out with a track called Merry Make It With Me by the Republic Tigers at therepublictigers.com. Folks, today is the day. Take a risk.